Omaha Public Radio presents another program from Film Streams, Omaha's nonprofit cinema on Noon Forum. On today's program, we'll hear a panel discussion which followed a screening of the 2010 documentary film World Peace and Other Fourth Grade Achievements, directed by Chris Farina. This program, presented in collaboration with Spielbound, a nonprofit that strives to educate, engage, and create community through board games, was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Tuesday evening, March 9, 2015, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the panelists and do not necessarily represent those of Film Streams, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. The members of the panel will be Deborah Wisniewski, Professor of Early Childhood Education at the University of Nebraska at Omaha and a Spielbound board member, and Michael Freida, a science teacher at Omaha Westside High School and the Spielbound Teacher Outreach Coordinator. The moderator will be Caleb Michaud, Assistant Professor at the University of Nebraska Medical Center, co-director of the Arthritis Research Center Foundation, and co-founder and chief executive officer of Spielbound. World Peace and Other Fourth Grade Achievements is a documentary which interweaves the story of John Hunter, a teacher in Charlottesville, Virginia, with his students' participation in an exercise called the World Peace Game. The game triggers an 8-week transformation of the children from students of a neighborhood public school to citizens of the world. The World Peace Game exposes children to the complex issues of the greater geopolitical world that they will one day encounter. The film traces how Hunter's unique teaching career emerges from his own diverse background. Hunter teaches the concept of peace, not as a utopian dream, but as an attainable goal for which to strive. And he provides his students with the tools for this effort. The children learn to collaborate and communicate with each other as they work to resolve the game's conflicts. They learn how to compromise while accommodating different perspectives and interests. Most importantly, the students discover that they share a deep and abiding interest in taking care of each other. Here now to introduce the program is our moderator, Caleb Michaud.
Years ago, I had the idea for Spielbound, not just because I had about 2,000 board games and needed to do something with them, but the more I was looking into it, because my day job is a researcher at UNMC, the more I was realizing there's so many things that board games do and help bring people together to do that we don't do on a regular basis. So since we were raising hands earlier, how many of you played a board game in 2015? All right, this is an extremely biased audience, so that's awesome. Well, I noticed I didn't say the holidays. Normally when I ask this question, people will say, well, I think I played one over the Christmas or Thanksgiving with the holidays. And they usually have very fond memories of it. But it's not something they do on a regular basis because you're really busy with work. You come home, turn on the TV, play a video game if you're a kid. You keep occupied with screens and why we're here with the screen. I love it. But at the same time, we love interacting with each other. And by doing my research, I found that the board games and the play and the education that comes from that is helpful in so many different ways at different age levels. This movie inspired me and many of us as sort of like this. The reason we wanted to see it is going to see what one teacher did with the fourth grade classroom, but not only is it useful for kids, but it's also useful for us in our adult years. And the research has shown that if you play board games, you are much less likely to develop dementia, much more so than people who exercise, read, and diet. So keep on playing board games. And I can talk more about the reasons for that later on. But
we have a wonderful panel here, which I know personally and happy to have. And we'll be accepting questions and just comments as well, not only on the documentary, but on the topic of games and play and use in education. And this is not only in the school system, but also at home and outside. So I'm happy to and delighted to introduce our expert panelists. First, to my right here, we have Mr. Michael Freida, who is a science teacher at Westside High School in Omaha. He's also the Spielbound Teacher Outreach Coordinator. And I'm going to read a little bit from his bio here that Michael uses games in his classroom to engage students in real-world critical thinking. He has also sponsored a game club at his school for the last 12 years. And in 2010, he was honored as Nebraska's Teacher of the Year. He's also an adjunct professor for UNO's CADRE program. Is that pronounced right?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. Yes.
And on his right, we have Professor Deborah Wisniewski. She is the John Langan Professor in Early Childhood Education at University of Nebraska at Omaha. She's also a board member of Spielbound. She is an active member of the U.S. Play Coalition and the Association for the Study of Play. She has a special interest and strong knowledge base in research, advocacy, and educational benefits of playing games, as well as looking at play and games being well-balanced life, and not only at home with her family, but also to the classroom. So I'm going to address the first question to both of you, and as you welcome me here, is what did you think of this movie? I'd like your reaction, but sort of the content as well as the quality, and just some first gut reactions, maybe.
Well, he's a man after my own heart. What's really moving to me is to see him cut away the technical aspects of what we do and really get to the heart of what education is all about, which is really challenging people to think about things in ways that they've never thought about them before. And that's not always easy. It's difficult. School should be a safe environment. And so he's basically constructed a game in which students are challenged to think about these problems in different ways, ways maybe that they've never thought of before, but he's their safety net. He's their blanket in which, even though it's a really difficult problem, they're able to engage this tough thinking in an environment in which they have a safety net available. And that's important to me as an educator, because we're not doing our jobs if we're not challenging people. Yet at the same time, we have to be cautious that in preparing students for the real world, we don't bring the real world to them a little too early. And I think that he's very careful at challenging them, but with reservations and acknowledging the fact that they're still young kids and they still have a lot to learn. But who are we to say when is too early for them to be able to start thinking about these problems?
I have to agree that I was in awe of just how masterful his teaching was and is. And it's in my nature to try to dissect that and and see what aspects really stood out to me. And I think one moment when he said at the very beginning of the game to the children, or in reference to the children, "I trust you. I have faith in you that you can do this." And I think until an educator can say that to his or her students and they believe that's a prime setting for real learning to happen. And the fact that he admitted, another point of admitting as a teacher, I think we think really good teachers always know what they're doing and what's going to happen next. But actually, I think really good teachers know how to set things up and trust their students and plan, but we really don't know what's happening next because we've shared that power and we've shared that experience with the students, rather than dictate what's going to happen.
It's the willingness to be vulnerable as an adult in front of a young person. And that's a skill that some teachers take a very long time to develop, and some don't develop it at all. But really successful teachers know that honesty is the best policy in the classroom. Honesty is the best policy in our relationships, I believe. Honesty is the best policy in the classroom. And until you're willing to admit to students that you don't know everything, then you're not putting them into a situation in which they can start making the decisions. Well, the adult doesn't know everything. Maybe I should think about this. We really want to be putting in students in the position to be making those decisions themselves.
So just to gauge our audience here as well, how many in the audience are currently educators of some kind?
About over half of those hands.
Oh, yeah. Large. So, yeah.
Thank you
very much for being, I mean, you do deserve a pat on the back. And as people often asked about my mother, and just a side story similar to this documentary, is that she's been teaching all of her life. And it's like, oh, that's the only reason she'd have the patience to deal with me while growing up. But there's something to be said for this. And I don't know about you, but when I was teaching, I would love to have students like this and engaged like this and be able to create an environment like this, the question that comes to my mind, is this something that you can recreate in the classroom as we see now, or is it something that's just sort of unique when you get sort of these side classes that are special, like, you know, the quote-unquote gifted, which is not, you know, used in every state, but I'm curious of what you two think of this.
Well, it's all about taking risks, and risk-taking is scary. In the classroom, in a standards-based world, we don't really develop inquiry in our students, though, until we're able to take risks. And so in mentoring teachers, one of the things that we work really hard to do is to encourage them to take calculated risks wherever possible, because we're not going to do anything great to induce learning in students unless we actually put the power into their hands and allow them to make mistakes in a safe environment, but also to really challenge themselves. And so I absolutely think that this style of education is absolutely possible, but it requires risk-taking, and it takes a leap of faith in our students to be able to do it. But I think that it can happen.
Yes, because we have so many educators in the audience, I do want to take the opportunity to honor what they do, because not all of us have films made about what we do. But there could be a camera in every classroom, and we would see a lot of this. I think we might be surprised. I firmly believe this can happen in any classroom. And that was one thing, as I was watching the film, I was thinking, being an early childhood teacher and working with children just younger than fourth grade, recognizing that while this teacher was amazing, he couldn't have done this without all the teachers that came before him. Because we know through development, we get better the more times we have chances. And so to take risks and to problem solve. So what I imagine actually is this isn't the first time these children have been asked to problem solve. This may be the first time they're asked to do it at this level and with this complexity. But we saw clips of them playing on the playground, and you know, kind of the typical playground conflicts that can come up. There's an opportunity for practicing world peace right there in a small, quick way. And I imagine seeing these children in preschool and learning to play games for the first time and understanding what a rule was and what happens when you don't follow it, and finding out what those consequences are. So I do think, just to reiterate, I think it's possible in any class, whatever label you want to give it.
So we're going to open up questions to the audience. I've got a few more in case you guys are having trouble thinking of some. But
I'm the person here who's not an educator, so I apologize for my non-education-focused question. I'm curious how do you get the adaptation from a game to my life and my, you know, problem-solving skills on the broader range, as opposed to, this was a really great thing we did in class, and wasn't that fun?
I believe what you saw in the film is a good example of that, and we often call it the planning. There was a planning stage to it, and for the early childhood educators following HiSCOPE, there's the plan, the do, and the review. And taking that time to review, and rather saying, yes, that was fun, but then stopping and thinking about, well, what just happened? Can we articulate what happened? What was I thinking when that was happening, or when that event was taking place? So we saw the children reflecting a little bit about that and giving them time for that too. It's incorporating play and games into an educational setting does take, I think we can see, a lot of planning and then debriefing and kind of circling back to it.
I really appreciate your question, because the film really illustrates the fact that there's a lot of planning that goes on behind the scenes that few people ever see in education. We have a term in education called unpacking the standards, and it's basically just a fancy way of saying that we have a set of goals that groups of teachers and community members have, and education professionals have thought about. What do we want our young people in our state to know and understand about a wide variety of different issues? And how you approach those standards, well, that's up to individual teacher discretion so long as it's defensible. And one of the real challenges of curriculum design, and it would definitely be the case with this game, is we could approach all of those goals individually and just go goal one, goal two, goal three, goal four. A really creative teacher is going to take that dozen or so standards that may be associated with the game and mix them up and say, how can I create a happy accident that could give students the opportunities to investigate these goals on their own terms, but still make sure that those goals are present? And so I guess an example from the game that I would say about that is that he has these different spheres of influence: economics, social, political. These would all be associated with different social studies standards, different critical thinking standards. And so he's really trying to, rather than make this a sit and get and a here's a goal and here's the next goal and here's the next goal, here's a bunch of goals that we know are interrelated to each other. Wouldn't it be great if we created a room of thinkers who in their future are going to have to tackle all these goals simultaneously? Why don't we practice it doing in that way, which some people would argue is a much more realistic way of shooting for those goals?
I want to add a comment also related to, you know, something I've said in the past is, you know, why games and what's so special about games versus anything else. And last weekend I had the opportunity to meet some new friends in the area, and they invited me over to play some games, and I ended up teaching them a game that I knew that they hadn't played before. And it turned into a 6-hour affair. And you know, it was before daylight savings time was going to take effect. I had planned to go to bed early so I could go to, you know, church in the morning. All these things I had planned ahead for, but you know, it's 1:30 in the morning, and I had an amazing time. And they've texted me twice tonight. Thank you again, you know, because it was such a memorable event because the game incorporated so much of these twists, so many different styles and things that people weren't expecting, and it became a bit of an adventure, and that will be firmly fixed in our heads until the next one. But it'll always be there for some event. Now, if there was some education in there, I've now learned that some people I should ask to do certain things, and I've learned more about them than I ever knew before. But there's also that positive experience of the fun that went with it. So that's just adding that in there. So as far as the review on top.
My name is Erlyn Johnson, and I'm in fifth grade. And my question is, have any other schools played the World Peace Game?
So I believe Mr. Hunter is developing it to be used by other educators. But you could see in the movie that he was making it up as he went. Like, he always had a response because he knew it so well. And it's a fairly complex game, but I believe he's still developing it. Good question.
What are you going to make a game for your classroom? That would be my question for you. What ideas do you have?
To be honest, I do not know.
And that's okay. That's a fair answer. But, you know, I just want you to know that if this is something that interests you, you know, maybe you do this as a service learning project, or maybe that this is something that you could talk to your teacher about. Like, hey, I saw this movie. What do you think about what role games might play in our classroom?
I'm pretty sure my teacher would like to play this game with the class. So. I don't
know. Okay.
Hot mic. I'm Greg, and I'm proud to say that I'm an employee of Spielbound, and I've seen a lot of cases in the shop of kind of people opening up over games. And Michael and maybe Deborah, I was wondering if you could maybe share a story of a time that you saw a quality of a student or somebody else just kind of unlocked by a game that you had no idea they had in them, just firsthand an experience that that you witnessed where a game kind of really opened something in somebody?
Sure. I'm trying to think of something professional, but personal comes out right away. It's actually playing games with my sons. And you see a different side of them that you don't always see when you're the mom who's, you know, making sure that they get breakfast and get out the door to school in time. And then you're in the middle of a game and you see two people who normally might be at each other's throats or or arguing, actually collaborating or helping one another in the game. And it's almost like everything else that was happening before the game kind of went away, and it allowed them to kind of show the nice side of them or show the creative side. And I recognize if we hadn't stopped and taken that time with the game, I wouldn't have seen that in my own family member.
Interactive games at Westside High School is the club that I've been running since I started teaching. And the goal of the club, very similar to the goal of Spielbound, is to encourage people to develop critical thinking skills, but even more so critically is social interaction. Especially in this world of smartphones and multitasking, it's sometimes just great to slow down and interact with other people and only have to focus on one thing at one time. The research on multitasking is not good. University of Michigan and Stanford recently have had studies released suggesting that we all think we're better multitaskers than we actually are. And from a perspective of games, that doesn't mean that a game can't be complex or couldn't be simple. Many games offer very rich, deep, broad thinking experiences, but they're an opportunity for you to focus on one thing at a time. And a lot of the students that we have at Westside are really looking to find their voice in school. And that could be true of any student, depending upon what they're seeking out that they're interested in. In other words, people like to have a place of belonging where this is the place where I'm the expert. This is the place where I have a lot of knowledge and understanding about things. And for many students at Westside, interactive games is that place for them. Our membership has exploded. We now have over 120 members, of which 50 or 60 are regular weekly attendees. And the most gratifying aspect of the club for me, because it is a time commitment, but it's a happy time commitment because it is an opportunity every week for me to see kids who could be getting into bad stuff if they didn't have a place to go and didn't have a place where they were an expert. And so we work on social skills. We work on leadership skills. I have students in leadership roles. Sometimes they're ready for those leadership roles. Sometimes they're not ready for those roles. But my job, just like my job in the classroom, is to see how far can we get this student to doing something really awesome that they didn't think that they could do before, and how might I be able to help them unlock that? And so we've had a lot of success at Westside High School unlocking student success through games.
My name is Natalie Zidane, and I am a proud regular visitor of Spielbound. And I was just wondering, I know from like the Kickstarter campaign that you had goals to incorporate games into the classroom. And so I'm wondering now, in light of the fact that you've become a nonprofit officially, congratulations, how exactly you envision Spielbound, what role it will play in classrooms, if, what you have in mind.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm on, no. I have so many plans. The place where I want to start, specific examples, is that I want to try to help area educators understand the extent to which they could use board games in their classrooms to meet their learning goals and to help students to unlock the same sort of positive situations that we've had with the game club at Westside. And there's so many different ways in which that could happen, whether it's embedded in the curriculum or whether it's just a small opportunity to work with games while a kid is in indoor recess or while they're taking their lunch with the teacher. There's so many different opportunities, ways that we could bring games into the classroom. And so first and foremost, my plan is to continue to help to be an advocate for area teachers that contact us. And our response just over the last couple weeks, since the blog has been active and since the website has been active, we've had teachers from all over the community, from elementary to high school to at the collegiate level, contacting us about how they might be able to bring games to their classroom. Specific things that I'm interested in developing over the next year would be to target some of our key education-themed games that could fit into Nebraska and Iowa State standards that could be opportunities for teachers to say, hey, this has always been taught this way. In what way could we get more a little bit more creative with this and put it into a context in which teachers could really find that students are more actively engaged in a decision-making process, less of a sit and get and more of an interactive, well, I'm going to make a decision here because this and that and them, and what do you think about this? And so I'm in the process of working on some educator fact sheets for our games to really distill down for educators who have plenty of time commitments that they have to worry about. What might Spielbaum be able to do to help them to see a pathway to success for games in their class? How does this fit into the standards? How long would it take to play? Is this something that I'm going to need to adapt to my particular group of students or my goals? Or is it something that, as is, it's going to do a great job? That's something that I'm going to be working on over the next year to see if we can get some more information out to area teachers.
I want to add a few things. So one thing that we've talked to lots of teachers about is that there's not much in the way of resources for them. A lot of, you know, in order to have the requirements to have a game in the classroom, it's usually like free time. Like, oh, you finished, so because you're really good, you can play this game. And we want this to be actually part of the lessons. And so we actually have some games out front that teachers have used nearby to show in different situations when it became to infectious diseases with pandemic or
freedom,
learning more about the Underground Railroad, to just some of the geography, like 10 Days in Africa, as well as simple math games like 7, 8, 9. And there's actually more and more teachers are doing this. We want to bring them together, have a network for them, and use when they can use lesson plans and in their classrooms, there's no reason that they can't sort of borrow, as long as they acknowledge the people who did the work, to share that. Several teachers in the community, besides Michael, also organize game groups outside of school, and they all tend to be so busy that it's hard to do much more beyond that, but they're very happy to talk with others and work with them about what's working, what's not. Lastly, I mean, having sort of a network of teachers who are using this is very helpful. And I think the other thing is, you know, how many of you can name 1,000 games? There's two of you, and I know you very well. So, I mean, there are a lot of board games out there that most of us aren't aware of, and if you'd had the chance to play, like the World Peace game, you'd have an idea like, oh my gosh, there's so much more to this, and I can find ways that this could work outside of just rewarding the students in the classroom. Heck, if you learn more about them, you see that this might be very successful at home. So that game I played last Saturday, I didn't tell you the name of it. It was Battlestar Galactica.
Yes.
How many of you have played that game before? Okay, there's about 10 of you. So I never would have thought that a game called Battlestar Galactica would go for 6 hours and we'd all be cheering and yelling and clapping hands at the end due to one final dice roll, like the flip of a coin here. But there was 6 hours more before that happened. So anyway, yes.
My name's Steve, and I'm wondering, parents, and you're getting kids to school and you're getting them to practice and getting their homework done and they're finally wanting to play the DS or whatever it is they want to do, and laundry still needs to be done, and bills still need to be paid, and all of these things. What encouragement, what advice, motivation do you have for parents to say, let's make playing a game happen? How would you encourage parents to incorporate that part in the daily life, daily schedule?
Yeah. Well, speaking a little bit from the parent perspective as well as some research behind it, but the first thing that we know that can get kids to play games is we as adults need to put down our iPhones and not worry about the laundry and play the game with them first. Also, I think it helps, depending on the age and the interest, knowing you're a kid enough to know which games to try out. And the wonderful thing about a lot of the games that are out there is they're leveled. They tell you what ages they're good for. And finding perhaps a game that is challenging enough for everyone and so that everyone can participate in that game. On the other hand, we also have games where in my house that are favorites. And so for one child and the other, and so they know that's their special time too. Planning time for it, just as you would on like having a family game night. And also talking with other parents who can join you. And so it becomes family's game night sometimes, with maybe friends they have at school that can come over.
I really look forward to a world in which the strategic thinking that we learn from games spills over into our chores and makes us more efficient at our chores. And so we're not only doing our chores in of themselves better, but we're doing more of our chores and getting them done better because we've given our young people the tools to make decisions that maybe they didn't have before until they had this fun experience thinking about this game. And now they say, oh, wait, I've always done these things in this order. But after having played this game, what if I tried this order? Wouldn't that make more sense? And, oh, I get to squeeze an extra chore in there in the time that I have. You know that. So this can work for us in all phases of our lives. It can make us more efficient in every phase of our life, I think.
There's a comment that one of you made in the room here was that games are a great way for introverts to come together with extroverts and not feel overwhelmed. And I really appreciated that, that bringing people together on a nice table, a nice game. You spend some time with the rules, and everyone has a focus on, you know, our mind is here. We're in the game, so to speak. But in order to do so, we have to interact with the person next to us, usually. Usually that's part of the game as well. And it really sort of having some rules, and again, sort of like having rules in a circle where you have the stick or something, having rules to the game really makes it easier for introverts and extroverts to all get along.
Hi, my name is Ron Azulay. I think one of the key things to any game is fun, as he says. So I know maybe you can speak a little bit more about the fun aspect of the games, both in classrooms with children that never played it and adults. And then people who are non-educators, so how can they see value in that? If those kids go home and talk to their parents, how do they kind of see that world through the child's eye? And then maybe some of the stuff that's happening in Omaha in the near future around play and that adult aspect of fun. Thanks.
Sure. I think we probably need to do a better job of, just as educators too, of educating the public that we can learn when it's fun. Learning and schooling isn't like, there's work and then there's play, and one doesn't touch the other, and learning only happens when it's work. Actually, we know that when you're in that moment where it is fun and you feel safe and you're willing to take the risk, that's actually, we know, when our brains are geared to learn and be receptive to learning. So that fun aspect is there. I want to add in here too, for being a play advocate, I'm also a play researcher and a realist. Play and the games provide a context for all of these great benefits. It doesn't guarantee it. So it takes adults and teachers and all of us to get to practice, and not just practice playing the games, but practice and reflecting on ourselves and in that debriefing time of, oh, I probably shouldn't have jumped in so soon to help someone. Maybe I need to, you know, practice myself giving that space that John Hunter talked about. So, and part of that is, I think sometimes as adults, when we're with children and they're having a lot of fun, their fun is sometimes louder and a bit more chaotic. And for some people, it makes us really nervous, and becoming comfortable with that and trusting them in that moment. Trusting that the argument is part of the game too, and part of the learning experience, not an indicator that the play went wrong, but that that's part of play. So I'm kind of going off there. I'm hoping I'm answering your question. But I also, you mentioned like other things happening in the community. I think Omaha is an amazing place to play for adults and children. And I'm proud to be part of Spielbound as one of those places for families. But also this summer, Kaneko is sponsoring or doing a whole program over the summer on intentional play and bringing in speakers and looking at all different aspects of play. And I believe we Spielbound will be a little part of that as well. But the idea for them is to show how play is really a part of all of our life, not just in that moment of the gaming, but thinking about work as a place to be playful, and it actually enhances our creativity and what we can do in our work lives and in our relationships and kind of across the board and thinking about. So they're really hoping the community will think about and be intentional with their play. So we hope we all kind of keep an eye out for that, because we'll be there as well.
I would say we're pretty serious about our fun in that a lot of the decisions that we make in the classroom about games is very premeditative. And it's not just about having fun, and maybe I shouldn't phrase it in that way because it makes it sound like it's a bad thing. The fun puts us in a frame of mind for learning. And in putting students in that frame of mind for learning, we also have to be careful that we are that we really have some goals that we're trying to accomplish. And we also have to be careful that in trying to reach those goals, we're not necessarily always deciding it on educator terms, but letting it be organic and letting students, like in the game, the World Peace game, that he's letting it organically develop. And so having a little bit of flexibility with that, with the fun, is very, very important, because controlled chaos is really where we want to be, because that's where we know a lot of learning happens. And that does take a lot of patience from the adult perspective. We're used to living orderly lives in an orderly world, and we want to make sure that we allow our students and our children the ability to have the chaos while still having great experiences with games. In addition, for community, Omaha has a couple of game conventions, and I'm going to blank on the exact dates. Caleb and members of the audience know this a lot more than me.
We have PretzCon coming on the second weekend of April, and then we have NukeCon on the first weekend of October.
And
these are 3-day events where it's basically you can go there and play lots and lots of different board games, and people are there to help teach you, and it's a great way to get around hundreds of people all at the same time. So, did anyone look at the New York Times crossword puzzle today? Spoilers, sorry, the theme of the puzzle was board games, and so I thought that was appropriate for today's topic. But there's one last question that I think that's been asked to me several times, and I want to pose it to both of you. So, in this day and age of No Child Left Behind and Common Core and all these things that we get blasted with, usually associated with negative aspects of government and education standards, and with the lowering of budgets and reduction of, you know, art and recess and gifted classes and so forth, where is the place for games here? Is there a place at all in the classroom, or is it just something we have to do at home or outside?
From my perspective, that all of that other, the technical side of teaching, the political side of teaching, doesn't preclude it at all. It may require us to become more creative and become more articulate in explaining why and how what we're doing, and requiring us to be advocates for children and perhaps diplomats as well in that process. But when I look at play and what it offers in a learning experience, every standard that's kind of been passed down to teachers, or when we talk about like college and career readiness, all the things we're talking about being, I mean, what you saw those children doing in that film is exactly what the goals are that we're being asked to do. Now, again, how we get to it and are allowed to get to it is another discussion, but I don't see those as mutually exclusive.
I think one of the biggest misconceptions in the profession is this misconception of inflexibility. And I find it difficult to find a school administrator who, when it really comes down to brass tacks, isn't interested in teachers finding creative ways to engage students. And so we definitely have legislative mandates that we have to follow. I think it's important for public education to be accountable in appropriate ways, and we could have a whole other separate debate on whether those accountability measures are the most appropriate way to define accountability. But the strongest factor in a student's education is a creative teacher who's willing to take risks, and even if it is simple as a pair of scissors and some colored paper and an idea, that in of itself can make a world of difference in engaging students in creative ways.
Question?
I'm Garrett Reimers. I'm currently a teacher here in the metro area. I was just also going to point out with those standards and the need for games in the education. There's actually plenty of research to support the use of academic games. I'm currently using academic games in my field as I do a research project, and I know there's other teachers that are currently using games in their research project as well.
Garrett, I've taught you well. Garrett is one of my cadre students at UNO's cadre program.
I want to thank you all for being here, not only for the film, but staying this late with the discussion as well. I really appreciate you being here, and I hope you continue to have fun in all different forms of play and so forth. So have a great, good evening. Did you want
thank
to wrap
you.
Things
yeah.
up?
Thank you, guys. Thanks
thank
for coming.
Thank you, panelists and moderator. Thank you so much, guys.
You've been listening to a program from Film Streams, Omaha's nonprofit cinema on Noon Forum. On today's program, we've heard a panel discussion which followed a screening of the 2010 documentary film World Peace and Other Fourth Grade Achievements, directed by Chris Farino. This program, presented in collaboration with Spielbound, a nonprofit that strives to educate, engage, and create community through board games, was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Tuesday evening, March 9, 2015, for broadcast at this time. The members of the panel were Deborah Wisniewski, professor of early childhood education at the University of Nebraska at Omaha and a Spielbound board member, and Michael Freida, a science teacher at Omaha Westside High School and the Spielbound teacher outreach coordinator. The moderator was Caleb Michaud, assistant professor at the University of Nebraska Medical Center, co-director of the Arthritis Research Center Foundation, and co-founder and chief executive officer of Spielbound. Special thanks to Rachel Jacobson, Patrick Kinney, Molly Welch, Brooke Masick, and Jim Foyt of Film Streams for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of over 400 previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Coate, thanking you for listening.